Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
Really well, JR. Good morning. Hello, Sean.
Good morning, Pierre. By the way, Pierre, not to go off topic, and
don't talk about it.
Okay. All right.
Is that what you were going to talk about?
About what?
I don't know. I was venturing into something I hadn't even brought up, and I just as I...
go for it. I thought you were going to talk about the New York Giants.
No. Yes. Well, yes. Pierre, could we talk about the New York football Giants losing to my Philadelphia Eagles? No, we don't want to do that.
JR, that's your team. That was painful.
Did you stay up and watch the end of it, Pierre?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Good.
Evan Engram, please catch the ball.
Yeah, no kidding. That would have finished the game. I did want to bring up something because I know you live in Connecticut, but you venture down into the Boston area often.
Yes.
That the state of Massachusetts has shut down all hockey for the next 2 weeks. Yeah, I just read that last night.
Yeah, the rink that I used to train a lot of young players kind of gave me a heads up last Friday that this was trending that way because the state of New Hampshire the week before had decided to do the very same thing, I think until November the 7th. So it looks like they're doing the same thing in Massachusetts, which is really unfortunate. It speaks to what we've been worried about as a group, you and I and Sean in particular, about, you know, the unfortunate part of COVID and you know, taking away venues where kids can and people can go and just let a little steam out in terms of training or trying to get better or skating or working out or whatever. And so, it's an issue. There's no question. I got a text late last night watching that football game from a friend of mine who played hockey at Harvard. And you know, he was basically talking about how unfortunate it is. He lives in that area. It's really, really too bad.
Yeah, well, we're not quite at that stage yet here in Ottawa and Eastern Ontario, although they have drastically cut back the number of kids on the ice, but not to the extent where they've shut everything down. But the numbers here are trending in the wrong direction as well. So that's, again, as you just mentioned quite well, it's very unfortunate because kids need to get outside, get exercise, and that's just another avenue that's been closed for them.
100%. And, you know, the other thing, I don't know how much people are paying attention, but officially now the NHL's, you know, canceled the All-Star game and they've canceled the Winter Classic. I think that I was aware of that going back to the time at the bubble in Edmonton. But again, now we're starting to see hard dates that, one was the 1st of January, one was the last weekend of January. Both of those hard dates now in the month of January have been scrubbed from the NHL schedule.
Pierre, would it have made any sense just from a television perspective? Because I know the stadium being full is a big thing, but I mentioned when Ottawa wanted to have their outdoor game here, they actually talked about Parliament Hill, and we had some fun with a pop-up stadium. Mm-hmm. Would there be any thought without the fans to have a backdrop like that, or at this time, you know what, there's just too much work and too much uncertainty?
I think too much work and too much uncertainty. I know that there's an appetite to try to put it in a farmer's field, build it and they will come. I know that's been talked about. I know there's been discussion about putting it up in the Rockies. I know to say that there's no possibility for that ever, I think would be misleading. I do think there's an attitude to have that.
Yeah, now that you said that, there was a report last week that the NHL talked about Lake Louise as well, right?
Yeah, no, that's okay. What I'm saying. So I know that there's an appetite to do things like that. But I say that in this year of COVID, it would be very, very difficult without fans. And that's one of the things that I think the league, I know people are going to find this to be, maybe self-serving for the NHL because I'm biased towards them a little bit, but just because I make my living in the league. But I would tell you this, is that the league really cares about the well-being of the fans. They truly, really do. And I heard it so much in Edmonton about we just can't let fans in and then all of a sudden have a huge outbreak of infection. We don't want that for our fans. We care about our fans, which is 100% true. I never heard anybody say, oh, don't worry, they're just fans. They've never once said that. And so I do think there's this very sensitive side to we have to make sure that not only are our players and our trainers and our coaches safe, we need to make sure that our fans are safe. And I know the league really cares about that.
Well, it makes sense given the late start and the compressed schedule, however long it is, that there wouldn't be a break for an All-Star game. They did go to great pains yesterday, Pierre, in their announcing when they announced the cancellation of those two things to say that doesn't mean that a January 1st start date or thereabouts is out the window. It just means we aren't going to do an outdoor game. But as we sit here right now, do you know, is there a specific amount of time that the league has to let its teams know when a season could start? Like, is it 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks? I'm presuming there is a set amount of time in which the teams would be given a heads up as to, hey, we're going to start the season on this date.
I have not heard that. I think you're right, though. I think you're right to say that, but I have not heard that from anybody. So I can't put the league moniker or stamp on it and say, oh, yeah, for sure, that's exactly what the league is saying.
Okay, I just know in the NBA, because I just read a story, because they've talked about going back on Martin Luther King Day, which is January 18th. Right. They have an agreement with the NBA PA of a two-month warning. So, in other words, they have to let them know by November 18th in that circumstance that the season is going to begin on January 18th. So I just wondered if the same thing happened in hockey.
Well, I think the one thing, and you brought it up correctly the other day, and I thought that was big news, even though it didn't sound like much, was that, you know, the NHLPA and the NHL said, okay, the seven teams that didn't play this postseason in the, you know, recreated playoff style that the league implemented, those seven teams would actually be able to start training camp early. But we haven't seen a date on that, have we? So I think that that's something that we need to pay attention to. They would probably get a two-week head start, I would imagine, over the other teams, just so they could kind of get their feet underneath them. So that's something to pay attention to. But I thought when you raised that the other day, it was a really big point that wasn't getting enough attention around the league.
It would also be another big difference between the NBA and the NHL is that the NBA players get paid year-round and NHL players do not get paid during training camp.
So we've talked about that a lot, Sean. Before you joined JR and I, since you've joined JR and I, and the one thing is that's what, again, it's not the fans' job to know this. It doesn't matter for them, but you need to know now. Players don't get paid in training camp, and players don't get paid in the playoffs. That's just the reality of the business. That's how it works. So it's a different kind of an equation compared to what the NBA goes through. So Sean's spot on.
All right, we had a couple of signings around the league yesterday, Pierre. Let's start with a guy you would have seen a lot out in, well, you saw both of them actually in the bubble, but Denis Gurianov was a former first-round pick of Dallas who had a rather uneven start to his career, but kind of a breakthrough this year. And then in the playoffs, he really kind of caught fire. He signed a two-year deal with the Stars yesterday. What's the ceiling for that player, do you think, as we get further down the road in his career?
I think a 25 to 35 goal scorer. I think a power play guy that really makes a difference. A left-hand shot on the right-hand side of the ice with the really lethal one-timer. A player that can dictate the terms through the neutral zone with his speed. He's not really afraid. In fact, he's very, very engaged. So I saw that improve, actually, as we went along in the bubble. His compete factor when it came to one-on-one physical play really enhanced. So I think a really high ceiling, and I could see him in that situation, whether he plays as a first-line winger or a second-line winger, he's going to be a very important player for them.
In a full season, if you're a Dallas Stars fan, Pierre, are you a little bit nervous about some of that older forward group, and the combination of Hudobin and Bishop?
Well, I think that's something that Jim Nill's trying to address. I think it's a very fair point that you're raising. But, you know, again, they're not getting any younger. But, you know, you can look at some of the younger players there. Now, one of the things that happened that I think hasn't been given enough credit anyways is Matthias Janmark leaving. Matthias Janmark was a very good player for them and somebody that they counted on a lot. Do I think the long term they're going to have a problem? I don't know, but I do see some development. Ty DeLandry is a player that I think will develop. Jason Dickinson really had a good playoff. He's going to need to score more. Gurianov being signed. Roope Hintz going to have to be a little bit tougher in every situation. Joel Kiviranta is a really good player, even though he's young. So I do see some younger guys that can compete, but you're right, they're going to have to transition their roster a little bit.
The word is that Stars and Rick Bowness are edging closer to a contract, which would remove the interim status.
Yeah.
So why isn't that done already?
Oh, I think it is. I just think that they took their time. Rick wasn't in a rush. Jim wasn't in a rush. Their relationship is rock solid. I just think they were prioritizing getting players done, and I think that deal was done a while ago. I just think there was a handshake, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We're getting your deal done. Here's what it is. Is that okay with you? And he's like, yeah, sure, no problem. I'm making it simplistic, but I think that was never in jeopardy.
I don't know if we ever discussed it, Pierre, but we had Jimmy Montgomery on just before he was announced as a coach in St. Louis. I have to think behind the scenes that Jimmy Neal must have helped him a lot, because to recover from whatever the hell it was that basically voided two plus years of his contract, for him to get back into the National Hockey League that quick is a great sign for Monty.
Oh, for sure, 100%. I can tell. Listen, you know, once somebody has something negative to say about you at the management level in the league, it's hard to overcome it, even if it's not true. And believe me, there's a lot of character assassination that goes on around the league behind closed doors by guys that smile right at your face, say, "Oh, I think you're great," and then the door closes and they slam you and crush you, and really affect your ability to get jobs, especially high-profile jobs. So that happens a lot, as you know, Sean. But Jim Nill is one of the great gentlemen and great people in the game, I'm telling you. He is a phenomenal human being. He's fought cancer. His wife's been fighting cancer for over 20 years. He has his priorities straight. He's an outstanding person in our league. And I'm sure that he helped Jim. I can tell you this, too. I know of one team that really actively wanted to pursue Jim as a coach, and ownership wouldn't let them. So, you know, it shows you what I'm just talking about. So Jim Nill definitely stepped up, I got to think, behind the scenes and did some good stuff for Jimmy Montgomery.
The Vancouver Canucks signed Jake Virtanen to a two-year deal. He had a career-high 18 goals this past year. He gets $2.6 million per year. Talking about guys who kind of had slow starts to their career, do you think the light has gone off? Do you think this year is an aberration? What are your thoughts on Virtanen? You would have seen him a lot during the playoffs.
I was really impressed, and that's one of the things I really enjoyed. I saw Jake Virtanen some nights start on the fourth line and eventually move up to the top line to play with Bo Horvat or Pettersson. And then I saw other nights where he's playing deeper in the lineup with Jay Beagle or Brandon Sutter, and I thought he did fantastic things. So he can play a lot of different roles. But I do think he's a 20-goal scorer. I don't think he's more than that. I think that's about where he's going to come in. His speed is very apparent. His size is apparent. He's game. He's really game in terms of getting engaged. So I think that that's a good signing, and I think Jake wants to prove a lot of people wrong. You know, people slam you a lot when you're a young player and you don't get things done or you don't play the way you can. But here's a kid that grew up in B.C. He's from Langley, B.C. Here's a guy that really cares about being a Canuck. He's a hometown boy, and he wants to prove people wrong. That's a motivated person, and that's somebody that can help your team.
Do you worry a little bit about the hockey sense, Pierre?
I do, but again, the size and the skating can overcome some of that. That's why I think that some nights you see him start on the fourth line, and then all of a sudden they realize we need a little bit of a spark, and he's a guy that can provide a spark. Now, it's not always going to be cute. It's not always going to be fancy. I don't see a lot of power play time for him unless he's jamming the opposition front of the net, but I do see that size and that skating ability, and that's definitely a factor.
We had Connor Brown on. I don't know if you ended up hearing that little piece we ran just before.
Not talking to Maddie, sorry.
Yeah, no problem. He said, I see myself, when talked about his role with the team going forward, he says, I see myself playing with top guys, and I think the game pretty well. You know, the PK obviously is part of my game. I want to take a step forward offensively. I think I have more to give. We're kind of one of the big takeaways from that. I mean, Connor Brown had 16 goals this past year, and they had played a full season, might have got close to 20. But the opportunities may not be there as much going forward with kind of more of the young players coming up. So what do you think is his ideal future with the Sens?
I see him between 17 and 24 goals, somewhere in there. And I see him being an unbelievable leader for the team. I see him being a critical component to the team. Players like that matter a lot. I'd use the Blake Coleman, Barkley Goodrow, Yanni Gourde kind of example. Alex Killorn kind of example. Those players matter a lot, and they're important players. And Killorn has proven over time, when he came out of Harvard, a lot of people thought one-dimensional checker, penalty killer. Now all of a sudden gets power play time, plays as a second-line player, does some fantastic things in every facet of the game. Killorn's a really important player for Tampa. Connor Brown's got to try to fashion his game after Alex Killorn. And if he can do that, he's a really good player, because Killorn's a really, really good player.
Yeah, and never misses a game. Going back to his rookie year, he comes in and scores 20 goals, 36 points. Why the change in ice time and obviously change in production, where after a pretty strong rookie year, Pierre, I know they're pretty deep up front, but philosophically sliding him down lower in the lineup?
No idea. I couldn't even begin to tell you. You know, I remember... I just remember Mike Babcock really liking Connor at the beginning. And I don't know what happened there. I really couldn't even begin to tell you what happened. But I would tell you this. You know, Zach Hyman's a guy that's really important. Connor Brown, Nazem Kadri, those guys, they're hard to find, those guys. And, you know, Zach Hyman's done some really good things in Toronto. I thought Connor was on the way to doing a lot of those same very good things. I thought Kadri, I know people were pointing at the penalties in the playoffs, but you look at his playoff with Colorado this year, and you're like, whoa, that guy's good. So, you know, maybe they just wanted to transition their roster and become a little bit more slick. But I said this to Mitch Melnyk, the great Mitch Melnyk on Montreal Radio yesterday. You don't win championships with toe draggers and slicksters. You don't. And I think Toronto figured that out this offseason. They might have made some mistakes earlier, and Connor might have been one of those mistakes. We'll see long term.
What about silly ciders? You like you that silly side? Can you win with a silly? Grant Fuhr was a silly cider.
You can win with silly ciders. I was just going to say, Grant won.
Yeah, that's a right-catching goalie for those who don't. That's Pierre's term.
That's a scouting terminology,
yes.
And I won't even begin to lie to you.
Yeah.
I learned that many, many moons ago on the Coquihalla Pass riding with the late Charlie Hodge,
all right,
who was the backup to Jacques Plante. He used to say to me all the time, you got to get that silly cider. You got to get a report on that silly cider. And so finally, I just said, Charlie, what the heck are you talking about? He goes, a guy that catches with his right hand. Haven't you heard that before? I'm like, no. He goes, Toe Blake used to tell me that. I'm like, okay.
Pierre, to finish, Fred Shiro was born on this day in 1925. Of course, passed away in 1990. Coached a Hockey Hall of Famer, coached the Flyers to two Stanley Cups in the mid-1970s. Mm-hmm. I know you know you were just kind of getting into hockey kind of around that time when he passed away, but what are your memories of Fred Shiro and his time?
Well, I was very obviously I'm very, very good friends with his son. I got to know Coach Shiro really well when I was a college coach, and you know, he was always amazingly fair to me. He's super intelligent. You could sit down anywhere with him. It could be in a ballroom, or it could be in a bar, or it could be in a rink, and he would speak to you in this unbelievably erudite and intelligent way about hockey or about politics or about anything. He's super smart. What I found the most interesting was near the end of his career, he was a radio analyst for the New Jersey Devils, and he was actually really good at it, even though he's a very quiet person. He was very good at it. And near the end of his career as well, he went and coached in the Dutch Elite League and for Tilburg, I think it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, that's
Tilburg
where the real coaches are made, in the Dutch Elite League, the
well,
DL.
Well, let me tell you something. Tilburg was a very good program at the time. I had played against them probably 4 or 5 years before that, and very, very good program. And Freddie went and coached over there. He and his wife, Mariette, went over and lived there and coached there, and he had a great time. He loved it. He said, this league's way undervalued. I remember him telling me that in terms of the players that were coming out of that league at the time. So there were a lot of Dutch Canadians, JR, playing over there at the time, some pretty darn good players.
Absolutely. And when they weren't doing that, they were speed skating on the frozen canals.
Oh, that's only up north. There's that frozen canal stuff is overblown. They were up in Groningen, and they were
yes.
up in Heerenveen.
Nice.
There
yeah.
you go. A little Dutch for you today, JR.
Nice. I love that, Pierre. Yeah, they don't even do it anymore, by the way. They've moved it into other countries, believe it or not, the speed skating in the outdoors. But that's a story for another day. We're going to put that on pause and wish you a good weekend, whatever you are up to, and we'll look forward to chatting. We'll see if a few more of these free agents have been sitting out for 3 weeks.
Where's Hoffman? Where's Vodman? Those are my two guys. I can't believe neither one of those guys.
Maybe it'll happen this weekend. We'll chat about it with you on Monday. Thanks for the time. Enjoy your weekend.
You guys have been great all week. Sean, thanks a lot. Jared, thanks a lot. Matt Hamer, thank you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay safe. Enjoy your family and friends. Take care.